Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 60th episode of Yes Sir, HR. My name is Mark, and I'm with...
Yes, you're with me, Dennis, again in Jersey Channel Islands.
Is the weather still cold, or are we seeing some semblance of humanity and spring?
Well, if I could show you the beach from my window, it looks quite pleasant. But I did have two thick jumpers on about an hour ago and was forced to put the heating on. I'm down to one jumper. Yeah, it's still pretty grim, yeah.
Okay. So we have been taking a bit of a hiatus here and there, and primarily also because I've been under the weather. But today, I think we are going to do something that we said we were going to do in the previous episodes. And that is, we are going to dive a little bit more deeply into this newest phenomenon on artificial intelligence and looking at ChatGPT and more specifically, how it can actually help improve teaching and learning for teachers. And we will try and do this from an evidence-based perspective. So maybe we can do this a little bit differently. I do believe you have been playing around with ChatGPT. So why don't you introduce ChatGPT to the people who are listening to this podcast then? What exactly is ChatGPT from your perspective?
Okay. I only heard about it actually from you, Mark, a couple of weeks back. And then I was speaking to another of our Singaporean colleagues, also called Mark. I think most people in Singapore are called Mark, or I just have a disproportionate number of friends called Mark. I don't know. But I did decide to look at it, and I was amazed when I played around with it. It was so easy to use. That was number one. It was quite simply, once you sign in and you've got an account, you just type something in an easy dialogue box, and there's an arrow, and you tick on that. Now, GPT is a chat box, or chatbot, as it's called, I think. And essentially what it does is enables a user, it's an artificial intelligence software, but it enables a user to put in a topic area or ask a question or even input data and ask the AI, the chatbot, to provide answers or to do something with data. Now, what is so amazing about it is it's super quick, one, and it can do things that as a student, if I was a student, would be quite remarkable. I can ask it to write an essay for me comparing and contrasting Freud's theory of personality with that of Jung, and I can actually specify it to write it as a summary or at a degree level or with a particular focus on the unconscious mind, and bang, this stuff comes out. So if you start thinking about what you can do with that as compared to when I was at school and a teacher would dictate some notes and then you went away and you copied them up, literally now you can say, provide me with a key summary. In fact, I did this. I'm in the process. In fact, I've written an article for the local JEP paper, which goes in on Thursday. And it's actually called Will GPT Revolutionize Learning and Teaching? And I put the learning first because I think that's where it's at. Students who now use this AI will find getting information, organizing it, producing work so much easier. And that will obviously have implications for learning. And as we will go on in this podcast to talk about teaching. So it was, I think it was introduced November last year. Version 3.5, which I've been using, has now already been enhanced to 4.0. And one interesting statistic, and it's the last thing I'll say by introduction, is that ChatGPT 3.5 took the bar exams for entry to the bar. It's one of these things that you do in order to get onto a bar course in many US states, and it had a 10% chance of passing, and ChatGPT-4 gives you a 90% chance. So when you actually look at how this AI is improving in terms of accuracy and range of information, it's phenomenal. There's much more I could say, but I think that's a pretty decent kind of introduction from somebody like me, who's not a technical expert like you, Mark.
No, I'm not a technical expert, but I must say,
compared to me, you are.
Yeah, I'm actually quite impressed that you know that it ChatGPT 4.0 is actually out. I'm actually very impressed that you know that. One of the fundamental improvements that 4.0 does, besides it being faster and a more subscription model based, one of the criticisms of ChatGPT was that it was not able to reference the internet, and information was only accurate up to 2021. Now, ChatGPT 4.0, and I think they've just made the enhancement and the announcement, they now have the capability to access the internet. In other words, you can prompt the AI to actually cross-reference or search the internet for extra information. And that, to me, is going to be the game changer. Because right now, you do not have to really question too much of is ChatGPT accurate, or more importantly, is the information up to date. Now that it has allowed to do that, you can be sure that a lot more information is going to be more accurate. It's going to have a lot more variety in information. And it's going to be truly a game changer for teaching and learning. How do you see that? So do you like the new enhancement that's going to come for 4.0?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because in these episodes, I'm always the most apprehensive. Well, not really apprehensive because we can do this, you know, very comfortably. But when you say your favorite part of our podcast is the introduction of new tools and what you've learned, and you know, and then you say to me, what about you this week? And I'm trying to think of some get out of jail calls as well. I've done this and I've done that. Well, I am busy, but in terms of keeping up with technology and using it, I'm way behind you. But I can proudly say this week I must have watched 20 YouTube videos. I must have read about 7 articles. I really got into this. And if we talk about enhancements massively, because the basis of chat GPT before version 4 was it was based on the language model. In other words, yeah, whatever had been written in text that they could, yep, capture. But now with the internet thing, it's actually going into text. So yep, theoretically, because it's now using machine learning and generative AI, now, but that's impressed you, hasn't it? You,
yep, know, it is.
But yep, I know what generative AI is, and obviously deep learning I know is a psychological thing, but when you start applying it to all this data on the internet, and when you start saying that this AI can now start creating new synthesis, yeah, the argument, you know, is starting to be discussed. Does it develop some kind of creative capability beyond existing data? And then we get into the wider issues of AI having consciousness. The whole thing is massive in that scientific and other community. But speaking to other people, they've never heard of it, but they soon will.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I think it's the number of people that are actually jumping on it. There are actually other language-based AI as well, such as Jasper. And later in one of my tools recommendation, I'll recommend another one. But for today, I think what we want to do is focus a little bit on the affordances of what ChatGPT can do. I think we will base our discussion on the free model, which is 3.5, because I think 4.0 is a model that people have to pay. Whether or not you think it's worth paying for, that's something that you will need to figure out. But I think for today, we won't be talking too much about the policy side of whether or not we should ban ChatGPT for assessment. That's another story for another, yeah, day, another podcast for another day. And we're also going to leave the ethics side out of it, because I think that's a whole new frontier, and we can spend like 16 episodes just talking about that. But I want to just highlight today a little bit about how teachers can use it for teaching and learning. And I'm going to make reference to the very interesting article that you sent me that we are going to use for this podcast. And I will put it in our show notes so that people can actually download this. Very simple to use. I would say it's a little sort of like a cheat sheet for teachers. And it's called ChatGPT for Teachers, Simple, Elegant Example. And I'm going to dive straight in because I think you have already covered what is it and how it can help improve our lives as teachers. But I'm going to jump straight into what she is suggesting as how ChatGPT can be used to improve teaching and learning. And the first idea is use ChatGPT for collaborative learning. Now, ChatGPT can be used in collaborative learning situations such as group work, projects, or discussions. By inputting prompts that relate to the topic being discussed, ChatGPT can generate ideas and insights that can be used to stimulate discussion and encourage critical thinking. So here's the challenge for you then. Using from what I just read, can you just elaborate a little bit more? How can a teacher set this up from an evidence-based perspective, which will include collaborative learning?
Well, I mean, if you think of that, let's go from a pedagogic point of view, yep. Right? Okay. So, why do we advocate collaborative learning, cooperative learning, whatever? It used to be talk to the students next year, small group learning, all this stuff. The idea of collaborative learning is that you're pulling together students with different amounts of prior knowledge in their heads. Different levels of conceptual understanding, competence across the basic knowledge skill area. And by getting them working together and using ChatGPT, you can give them much more meaningful learning tasks to do rather than getting them to fill in workshops and do mundane tasks. Any subject you like. I mean, if you take history, you could say to students, right, I want you to do a analysis of the rise of Nazism in Germany at the time of Hitler, identify the underpinning social economic causes, the philosophy. You can give students really interesting, meaningful tasks that isn't just about copying text and copying notes, but now with ChatGPT, they can work as a group collaboratively. They can each have their own laptops and look at different aspects. One could look at the philosophical aspects of Nazism. One could look at the economic situation, and they can then merge their information together. They can get it to write stuff. They can get it to organize notes. It's just a great way of making learning one interesting for students. So the implications for curriculum, and I think we can do the next episode on that, I think are massive, because we can now give students and the differentiation aspect of GPT, you can have groups at different levels doing different things. The key thing is having the students working collaboratively well anyway, which is always an issue. And secondly, being able to give them the right task to do and teaching them the skills of good thinking to ask the right questions. Because if you're not asking the right questions and being able to follow that up with more deeper analytical questions or compare and contrast, so they've got to learn to good thinking skills along with the collaboration. So that just kicks it off.
Okay, so I understand, but for the people who have not used ChatGPT and who could be wondering, why can't they just access the internet then and go and search for the socioeconomic factors that led to the rise of Nazism? So what is so special about ChatGPT that Google can't do?
Well, basically what Google will do, it will pull up sources of information, yep. But it might be long-winded, it's not focused. With ChatGPT, you can set your learning materials up for a specific group of students. You can say, right, okay, I want the materials to be for a group of 13-year-old students. I want discussion prompts. You can make it very much focused. So instead of students just going on the internet and they might pull something out and it's complicated, they don't understand, you can make the task and the guidance so much more focused around the real learning points, the key concepts that you want.
Right. Okay, so I think that's an important factor, because I think ChatGPT allows the material to be generated more efficiently, focus on what the prompt is, rather than just providing a whole mess of information that students might have difficulty picking out what is important and what's not. Now, having said that, I think that I want to just add to what you just said. While ChatGPT can generate these kind of factors and provide it in an interesting and easy to read format, I think the next step would be to enhance the collaborative learning experiences, would be to get students to probably peer mark each and every one of these generated essays, so to speak, so that they can actually learn to spot errors, mistakes, because I think ChatGPT is not 100% accurate. There have been instances where chat has been found to be using sources that are not reliable or don't exist. So I think some of these things can be done to enhance that experience and also to get students to be a little bit more critical thinkers in that sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because if we want students to ultimately become self-directed, they must learn how to assess their own learning. And
right.
The idea is that very often students in traditional assessments are told they've done well or they're not done well, they've got graded with maybe a few comments. But what's really important is that students have and understand the criteria upon which they're being assessed. So that's why we've advocated, and from an evidence-based point of view, if students can see exemplars of good work against the criteria, that's really good for them developing self-assessment, because you can only assess something if you know it well. And one of the, I think we did a podcast on reflective practice, and the reason that John Hattie, who we've talked about a few times for obvious reasons, referred to reflective practice as this modern penchant for reflective practice is no more than post hoc justification. And the basic point is, it's not got an evidence base. If teachers don't really understand what is good teaching, you know, the cognitive scientific principles that underpin good teaching that we've done a couple of podcasts on. So people who are not following that, please go back and look at those. We will revisit them. So the point is, what we want, students can go onto ChatGPT, and teachers can do this. So teachers can actually identify the criteria and give it to students to use. So that saves teachers a lot of work. But you could also say to the students, right, we're going to do this project on X, Y, or Z, or you're going to produce this thing based on specifications. You can actually then say to ChatGPT, can you identify the key criteria for assessing this essay? So right. In a sense, you can, the danger, one of the big criticisms, or not criticism, I don't see it's criticism, but one of the things, and it's going to have massive implications for teaching and assessment, is that students can literally do their own work if they use chat, do the work, maybe not their own work, but do good ChatGPT work, putting together their assignments, getting the relevant information. And now I think with the new versions, and it's easy to hunt down the references anyway, and then also then download the assessment criteria, ask it questions about the assessment criteria, what it means and what should be included, and therefore do their self-assessment. And again, if they're working in small groups doing peer assessment and tutoring, they can be getting grade A's on almost any work that is a take-home assignment. And so from a teaching point of view, it's, our teachers gonna, is it of any valued time, teachers standing in classrooms showing students PowerPoint slides when they can be getting better, more current, more focused information through the AI, and then spending their time digesting it, doing the thinking, learning out what good thinking is, learning what the assessment criteria is, that it changes the whole nature, I think, of what teachers actually do with students.
Yep. Yep. So I think that really summarizes that part very well. I think not just collaborative and then just solving the work problem or issue, but I think what you mentioned about reflective practice and getting students to really understand their learning process, I think now ChatGPT has given or for want of a better word, alleviated the extra work that maybe teachers need to do for their students. Now students can use ChatGPT sort of like their personal tutor, so to speak, to help them guide their thinking process. Do you think that could be something that students should be doing more often as well?
Well, it makes sense because, Mark, I mean, I think we had a conversation a couple of episodes back where there was a report in, certainly in the UK,
yep,
where there's a big consensus that the curriculum in its present form is just not relevant to the needs of industry. It's not meaningful to the interests of students. And yet we're still making students learn loads and loads of stuff that doesn't seem to have any value apart from boring the students and making that a difficult issue for teachers are trying to get students to be intrinsically motivated. The stuff itself is not intrinsically motivated. So I think there was a real need to revamp what are we going to teach students, one, and what are we going to spend classroom time that is not there showing 3 or 4 PowerPoint slides and reading them out and giving them worksheets to do. The big question now, and this is where I think we can get involved quite significantly, the big question is, how do we now reframe mainstream education to maximise what, not just ChatGPT, but the whole area of AI, how we design an educational system, how we design curriculum, and the implications for learning environments and pedagogy, that is now going to be the central challenge for educational planners, curriculum development, and people like us. So I think there's a lot of work for us on this, Mark, and it's going to be really important that it's got to be done from an evidence-based perspective. Otherwise, like any other initiative, if it's not done from an evidence-based perspective, it won't work in the real world. Just like a car that's badly put together with the wrong parts doesn't actually work well. So I think we really are at a kind of singularity, you know, that word is popping up, and in terms of in terms of medicine, in terms of work environments, but certainly in the education system, there's got to be very significant changes where we use these technologies thoughtfully and we somehow try to enhance student learning capability and not just have some veneer of sort of grades and various other things. We've got to, I think there's an opportunity to improve the real quality of student thinking as well.
Yeah, okay. So let's shift gears a little bit. And I'm going back to what you said earlier. Also, one of the things that ChatGPT can do is, and I think this is, to me, the game changer, is Chat is able to create and help the teacher with differentiation in the class. Now, differentiation is an important aspect of teaching. And I'm reading from the articles. And then, again, I will put it in the show notes so that people can refer to it. Differentiation is an important aspect of teaching as it helps to support students with additional educational needs and ensures that every student has access to the resources that they need. Now, ChatGPT can be a powerful tool for differentiation as it can generate customized learning materials and activities based on the needs and abilities of individual students or small groups. Now, very specific prompts can be used by ChatGPT to create differentiated learning material. Now, I'm going to say, I'm going to stick my neck out, and I want you to jump in here and tell me whether this is really going to happen, or am I just, going to be a pipe dream, that ChatGPT will actually bring us closer to the holy grail of personalized learning.
Yeah, well, I remember, Mark, I think you would have still been probably in the kindergarten. I was probably doing my PGCE in 1975. And
that was the year I was born then. I wasn't even in kindergarten. That was the year
there
I was
you
born.
Go. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of stretching it. I just want to see if you're paying attention, mate. You know? Unlike the Man United defence against Liverpool, they weren't paying attention, were they? I won't do much as a Tottenham supporter. So we're just having a little kind of interlude, right?
Yep.
Yeah, a bit of interleaving. Anyway, let's go back to this point. We had something in the UK called mixed ability teaching, and it was based on this idea that you put all the kids in from all different ability, whatever definitions of intelligence you want to use, but you put them all in the classroom together, and it's all going to be sweet. It's going to be inclusive. The kids who are doing better or more competent or brighter, whatever your terminology you want to use, would help the slower ones, and it would all be happy days. Well, it wasn't. It was, I was working in the school in the UK. Eventually, the school got closed down, not just because of that, because of an whole host of factors. But it was an absolute nightmare. Teachers were pulling their hair out because they're going into classrooms trying to have five or six different lessons and trying to manage this. So you've got kids who are moving through stuff quickly. You've got other kids who can't even understand the question. Absolute nightmare. Okay. Yeah. And this issue is still buzzing around today. We're still talking about differentiation and we're still talking about inclusion and these kinds of things. And it's all well intended. But, it's a bit like having a party and you've got 30 people coming around, but you've only got, six sandwiches. You need enough sandwiches for everybody. And if you're going to have personalised learning, you've got to have the resourcing. You've got to have the number of staff, sometimes, teaching assistants. But to create lessons and to create opportunities where students of different abilities can use a tool and get information at different levels of complexity. In other words, they can work at their own pace, and as they improve, certainly as they improve their thinking skills and language skills, I think language skills are going to be really important, how to read better and how to think better. We've got to focus more, I think, when we talk about teaching English, we're going to focus on getting people to better read, vocabulary, organize information, rather than a lot of this fancy stuff that goes on, which we could have another episode on. But, learning about sort of metaphors and similes and all these things are part of English. I'm not saying that, but let's get kids to be able to read and write reasonably well, and then they can look at the more nuanced aspects of language. And we want students to have good grammar eventually, but let's get them putting sentences together and understanding vocabulary and getting some meaning, enjoyment about learning stuff rather than stuff that is, I'm not saying it's not relevant, it's relevant, but it's more tertiary. If we're going to have differentiation, we've got to have pretty much all kids able to read and to write at a reasonable level to get benefits from these technologies. And personalized learning is now very much a realistic possibility. It's not pie in the sky stuff.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you. One of the things that we are trying to do is use data to, and I think we've talked about this very briefly in previous episodes. So like what Dennis said, please go and check out our previous episodes. I think you will find us talking a little bit about using the rising importance of using learning analytics and data on student learning to make decisions on how to customize or personalize the student learning experience that targets their specific learning needs. Now, you're absolutely right, because I think for the longest time, I think the godmother, if I can be used that term very liberally, of differentiation or differentiated instruction would be Carol Tomlinson. Now, one of the hardest things, in my opinion, that teachers find it difficult to do is how do you differentiate the learning content or the curriculum or the syllabus, whatever you want to call it. And that creates a problem because that creates extra work for the teachers. Now, instead of having to maintain just one set of worksheets, now I need to maintain maybe five different sets or three different sets minimally for students who are doing very well, students who are on the average track, and students who may need a little bit more help. So they find it difficult to do. They're already struggling for time, already struggling for space, and now suddenly I need to maintain three sets of worksheets. That's not ever going to happen. And that's why I think maybe differentiation suffers a little bit from its ideals. But I think with ChatGPT, you don't really need to create these materials because Chat can do it for you. All you need to do is be good at creating the prompts so that you can tell Chat to create the worksheet specifically to your specifications, and you never actually have to create a worksheet again. How cool is that?
That is really that's manna from heaven, isn't it? Really, yeah. For a lot. I remember the days of sitting there with Gestetners and Banders and trying to come up with something that, which it took ages just to do one for a class, let alone trying to do differentiated ones. So now, in terms of preparation, teachers that and keep it, and also keeping current in terms of professional development for teachers now to keep current with good practices. Oh, well, I'm teaching 20 hours a week and I've got admin work to do. And it's true, the teaching job in for many teachers, obviously it varies from school to school, et cetera, et cetera. But look at the high attrition rates in teaching. It's, in the UK, I think it's got the highest attrition rate of any occupational group. You can't teach 20 hours a week, do preparation, do marking, do counselling, do all the admin, do this, do that. It's just not realistic. And all that teachers are often doing, and, you know, from what I read, certainly in the UK, and I think it's in many countries, is that it's just a question of trying to get things done, whether they're done from a very good evidence-based standpoint is another issue. And it's a bit like with the health service in England, is that, you know, we've got doctors on strikes, we've got nurses on strikes, and they're working hard, and what they're, you know, what they're basically saying is that they can't keep working at this pace and make sure that, you know, their practice is the best. I mean, how can you expect doctors to spend 16 hours a day doing surgery? I mean, it's just ridiculously, there's too much work. So we've got to look, and this is in certain areas, and teaching is one. We've got to have teachers who are doing less of some work and being able to focus more on the more personalised aspects of human learning, getting students to motivate, to be motivated, to develop key skills, to think, to self-regulate, and be able to build that kind of rapport rather than running around class with, have you done this, have you done that, hurry up, do this, keep still. It might offer opportunities for some real improvements in teaching and learning. Equally, it may not, because it just depends on how it's used and how education's managed and policy and teacher professional development stuff. There's a lot of things potentially good.
Right. Okay. Because I can share my own personal thoughts. I've actually used it to create a workshop on differentiated instruction.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have actually used it. I've actually used it to create a lesson plan for activities for differentiated instruction. And I've actually asked Chat, going back to your point about, using it to keep in touch with teaching and learning practices, I've actually used Chat to summarize papers on a topic of interest. So, for example, you know, I'm going to do my further studies in the area of alternative assessment. So I was somewhat lacking in inspiration. I just decided to ask Chat to help me generate a few examples of what alternative assessments are with specific references written in APA style. And in less than 5 minutes, it gave me no less than 5 references on alternative assessments, and I actually cross-checked the literature, and I must say it was very accurate and it was up to date. I was pleasantly surprised actually then. So that saved me a whole ton of time searching for it on the web and then just going down this rabbit hole that I would never ever probably recover from. So Chat was just brilliant for me, and he even wrote the references out in APA style for me.
Right, yeah. I wish I would. I mean, I wrote the books that I wrote, I remember
exactly.
Hundreds of hours of editing and looking for this and checking that and doing and hunting around for stuff. And certainly, yeah, I mean, Google was useful in part, but it's a bit like kind of playing for man. This is like playing, in fact, I mean, Chat, GPT-4, and it's only going to get better, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. It is.
So, it's like Manchester City now buying another 5 world-class players who are better than Erling Haaland, and as compared to playing in other teams.
Yeah, apparently even Google is going to come up with their own version. It's called the BARD,
B-A-R-D. Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
So can you imagine, you know, like having these tools literally at your fingertips, never ever having to blow off the dust of a dusty journal ever again, because everything just at your fingertips, just it's just mind-boggling.
This whole AI thing, this week I must have watched about 40 videos on AI. I mean, I've read quite a bit about it, and I did it even in my last book, write a fair bit on it. So I've got decent knowledge of it. And, you know, the notion of how genetics, robotics, IT and nanotechnology come together as a singularity. Kerwheel talked about that being real about 25, 30 years down the line. And people say that's ridiculous. That can't happen. I think it can. I do think, there's a lot of people now saying that children born today, given, you know, living in certain types of societies, obviously, they may be almost able to live 200, 300 years, possibly. We just don't know, because once you can control the aging process and you've got this link between neural networks and IT networks, and you've got bots flying around in your body repairing things and growing new organs and reversing the aging process, all of these things, this research now is really moving forward. 10 years ago, it was more theoretical. But you watch the programs on it and the documentaries, and I think I'm going to just miss it. You might be all right. You'll still be watching Man United in 100 years' time. dead before Tottenham win any major trophies, but then so might you, you know, and so might me, the newborns. It really is here now. It is a new industrial revolution. You know, the Internet of Things, that word floated around for a while. And I looked at it and thought, this is a bit fuzzy. But when you unpack it and you look at what's actually going on in genetics, robotics, IT and nanotechnology, and it's bursting through now. And this is a thing that is going to be big in education, certainly.
Yeah. So I think maybe we can make use of ChatGPT to identify the next striker for Manchester United.
You can do that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we can wrap up this part, but before we do that, we have talked about two ways in which teachers can make use of ChatGPT. One, for collaborative learning. Two, to personalize learning for their students. But I think there's another part which I thought was quite interesting that I wanted to share with our listeners. And that is a little segment here that says streamlining your workload with ChatGPT, tips and techniques. Now, knowing how busy teachers and instructors and lecturers are, here are some ways in which ChatGPT can make your practice easier or more efficient or more productive. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4. We're going to go through each and every one, and I want you to share with me your thoughts on them. One, generating materials and resources. ChatGPT can generate a wide range of materials and resources, such as worksheets, quizzes, and handouts. This can save time by reducing the need to create these materials from scratch. And I know you were sharing a text with me saying that you are taking over new classes then. So do you see you using ChatGPT to create worksheets or, you know, some puzzles for them?
Yeah, it really is that good in terms of producing resources, isn't it? And you can actually get it to create very thinking orientated type questions that connect to the real world, rather than just going to textbooks that have been written in it based on the old curriculum and pulling out questions that are just very wordy. I look at lots of textbooks in different subjects, and I think to myself, it's hard enough for the teachers to understand the questions, and, like, you know, why are we learning this? You can really get it to make questions that are very focused on specific things. And then obviously you look at it yourself, and I don't see it as teachers now just taking stuff off of ChatGPT, but it's saving them perhaps 80% of work in that area that they don't have to do of generating these resources. So that's massive, I think. That's massive.
Okay, that's the first one. Second one, which I thought was even better, it can actually be used to create assessments. You don't actually have to go and create an exam paper ever again.
Well, teachers love writing exam papers, don't they? I mean, that's one of the things I've been in many schools, and I've got to write another exam paper, there's got to be a reset. I mean, this change, this is just, yeah, I mean, it's just a little bit like the days. I remember when, not like you, when I did my, in fact, I'm just trying to think it, when I did my, even my MED theses, I wrote it out and I gave it, I paid somebody who could type well to do the typing and the word processing. It probably cost me about £500, and it took ages to do because I had to drive to her house, give it to her, and then obviously she sometimes couldn't understand my writing, whereas who can? yeah, it's just it's a game changer. I mean, that right. word used frequently, but yeah, I mean it's a game changer for teachers and certainly for students. And what I would be looking at now is that teachers need to know how to use this well. They need to be very au fait with what is good thinking. They need to understand the old processes of metacognitive capability. All these things, they should be teaching students those skills. So when the students go into it, they're not just putting in, tell me something about geography, but being saying, can you do me a map of this area with these geographical features highlighted, and now this has impacted the environment in location X. So once the students are thinking better, they're going to ask the right kind of questions. So that's where the focus has got to be.
Yeah. You know, I tell you what's another bonus to this. And I've actually tried this. If I was still teaching literature again, one of the things that I had a lot of difficulty doing was to generate different thinking questions for same passages, because if we use the same text over and over again for different batches of students for 5 years, it would be very difficult to keep on thinking of brand new questions that are not repeated. Now with ChatGPT, if I was teaching literature again, I would not have that problem. That's the first one. Second thing that I think is a bonus is, while it can create the exam paper for you, and one of the bigger pains that I also experienced as a teacher, and I'm sure you would have experienced the same thing as well, is do you not only need to create the exam paper, you also need to provide the solutions or the marking scheme or the rubrics. I don't know about you, but I find writing rubrics a real pain. Now ChatGPT can do that for you as well.
Yeah, how many workshops have I run? Mind you, we could be redundant in many aspects of our work now. So I think we better bone up on how to breed pigs in the Philippines or something like that. I used to run workshops on designing rubrics and various things. I'm not sure now. Could ChatGPT do that better than me? Maybe. So who's going to pay me £1,000 a day to do a workshop on rubric design when ChatGPT would do it 5 days and it's free? I think I'm just going to go out and buy a garden fork and learn how to use it.
I think you might want to ask ChatGPT to generate a manual for you on how to rear pigs in the Philippines. We do also, one of the other things that chat can do, and we have already talked about this, really is also to provide additional support. You can ask chat to come up with extra materials to help students who might be struggling, or to get them to support students who are struggling with a concept. You can explain the most difficult concepts in the most basic forms, and then they can have their own personal tutor. We have talked about that. But the final one, which I thought was would be interesting on how we can help teachers streamline their work, is both about summarizing and rewriting text. Now, ChatGPT can generate summaries or rewritten versions of a given passage of text. Now, you can do this or get your students to do it to help them understand and retain key information from a text, which is also, I think, helpful, which we talked about. Helping them to do learning strategies such as interleaving, such as creating mnemonics. So I think they can even use ChatGPT to help them remember important concepts. Again, something that would not be possible just maybe last year, but this year that barrier has now been taken away.
Yeah, I mean, John Atte, and I quoted him somewhere, he talks about teachers becoming learners and learners becoming teachers and the two working collaboratively. It's an actual quote of his that I've actually used in, I think, the last two books I wrote. I can't remember it word for word, but it's that kind of thing. And if you think about it, that's what we've got now, because there's so much information in so many areas that, you know, you could be a teacher of geography, you don't know everything about geography, or no doctor knows everything about all aspects of the body, and that's why we have specialists. It's as simple as that. It's now in a situation where we can be in a educational setting. It doesn't even have to be in a classroom. It could literally be anywhere. And we can say, right, we want to understand more about the impact of global warming in this locality, given these geographical features, etc. And students and teachers can sit there and work on this, and they'll all be discovering things. Teachers will be discovering new things. And what teachers can do, if you're a geography teacher, is where necessary, you can help students scaffold the learning. So the kind of stuff that was talked about a while back, teachers going from the sage on the stage to the guide on the side, that was always dangerous nonsense to me at that time. But now with this, we really are in a situation where teachers, GPT, you know, perhaps is the sage on the stage. But what teachers will do is they'll be more than a guide on the side. They will be the mediators of good thinking. In other words, so that the students don't get duped into any misconceptions, misunderstandings. The teachers there will be, yeah, there'll be guides on the side, but it won't simply be passively. They will have to be expert mediators of the subject, as well as getting students to really develop good inference and interpretation skills, good evaluation skills. So it's a different role. It's not the sage on the stage, but it isn't a kind of, yes, Johnny, or yes, Linda, or Sarah, or whatever the name is. Yes, you're doing well, just persist and learn it in your own way. A kind of, you know, fluffy social constructivism, as I used to call it. It's going to be a different role, but it's going to be a role where teachers have got to learn some new skills themselves, and they've got to be familiar with these technologies, and they've got to be familiar with a lot more cognitive science. And I do think that's where and why not have cognitive science as a school subject rather than some of the subjects that are presently taught? Big argument for that, isn't there? Knowledge about the world, knowledge about technology, knowledge about the brain and the interfaces between the two. Let's have a subject on the coming together of science to create new forms of society, because it's our kids who are going to be living in that society. They've got to make decisions about it, haven't they? And that those decisions are going to be critical.
Right. That's, I think, would be a perfect place to stop for this first part. I know we have just only scratched the surface of what ChatGPT and AI can do. Next stop, the Terminator. And I think then that might not need us to have any more episodes, because we might all be dead. But I think there's a lot more to look forward to, and I'm pretty sure that we will talk more about this as a new technology or new advancements in ChatGPT happen. And also maybe with the Google Bard, I think that would be something that we should try out as well. And maybe we do a head-to-head against ChatGPT. Okay, so let's move on to part two, which is again my favorite part of the podcast. Today has been quite discussion has been quite focused a lot on technology. So Dan, anything you want to share, anything that you found interesting, maybe from the 40 videos that you watched, is there any one particular one that you thought was interesting that we all should watch it? I can always share the link with our listeners.
I tell you what, Mark, I've so many. I think if you just go on YouTube now, in fact, I am watching YouTube more than every other TV, apart, in fact, probably even more than the football, there is so much interest in quality content. Now, there is some silly stuff as well. I mean, you see these headings, the UFO phenomena finally settled, and then when you watch it, it's the same old videos, and yeah, I mean, I think there's strong evidence that there are things flying around, and have been, and are, and will be, that are from other worlds, but, you know, the idea of so many people going up in spaceships and, you know, meeting aliens, I think that's a little bit dodgy at the moment. Anyway, but there's a lot of really good, I would really encourage people who are interested in the future and learning of key things, not just in education, but in science and just things going on in the world, to use YouTube more. And some of it's poor, but there's some cracking stuff as well. So that's my takeaway. And I've been doing it because I thought I really want to look at all the views on ChatGPT. And you've got Elon Musk talking about it being scary good. And Jordan Peterson saying, wow, you know, he very much here. It's here and it's now. And we can really do something good with it. But he said it could be living hell as well. And so there's so many people who I would rate as intellectually very good and significant figures across different fields of science who are saying really poignant, open things about the way the world's moving, the big decisions. In other words, YouTube is a pretty good learning environment if you are a critical viewer. And that's the important thing. Too many people could look at stuff on YouTube, as in social media generally, and if they're not really understanding things in a deep level, can be fooled in dangerous ways.
Yep, perfect. I have an app that I wanted to share. It's actually related to ChatGPT. One of the things that I came across as I was reading up a little bit more about ChatGPT was all the plagiarism checkers are now desperately updating their products, trying to see if they are able to spot written content being written by bots or artificial intelligence. And I must say that there have been a few, there are some hits and misses, and they are able to detect whether or not certain written, whether is it a blog post or whether is it an essay is written by artificial intelligence. Here's something that I found, and the app is called Quillbot. Quill as in Quillbot. Once again, it's Quillbot. You know, Quill, like the, you know, the olden days, the pen.
So
it's called Quillbot. So what it does is, it will change ChatGPT's output. You can copy a paragraph from ChatGPT, paste it onto Quillbot, and it will rewrite it for you in a more personable way, as if a human actually wrote it. So if you wanted to beat the system again, just to be sure, generate the content using ChatGPT, copy it out and put it through Quillbot and tell it to make it a little bit more informal, make it a bit more conversational, and it can do that for you as well. That is the kind of artificial intelligence tools that are now available today. Now, how cool is that?
Yeah, very much so. But the thing is, we're now going to have to look. What's going to happen in education is how we assess students.
Correct.
This is the game changer that you can't... the essays have come in. I'll mark them against the criteria. This is very good. Because literally, everybody can get A's, can't they, with doing virtually no work.
Very correct.
So I think that kills off this everything being done by just... you do your essay or your dissertation, you send it in and it's marked. There's got to be a real change. And I do think kind of more traditional assessments are going to come into play. You'll have an open book exam for, you know, for factual data, but you'll have to solve real world problems, write real world essays exam conditions. And to be honest about it, I'm all for that, frankly, because... Yeah. What can happen is I don't mind students doing their work on ChatGPT, but what they must be taught is, well, if I'm getting this information, I've got to understand what these things are. What is machine learning?
Yes.
What do we mean by deep learning? What is the interface between you? How do neurons work? How does machine learning work? What's an algorithm? What's generative AI? They've got to understand all these concepts. And they've got to understand the subject content. So a lot more would be is students do pieces of work, increasingly, I think, under exam conditions. And also that they are interviewed on key bits of work on key concepts. And I think that's where it must go. Otherwise, the old exam system, if it's just going to be based on students going away and submitting stuff and teachers marking it, it's just meaning. It will become meaningless. Even nihilistic, just reification of a waste of time. I mean, you could put so many words on it that would be negative because it'd just be stupid, because anybody can present good work now. And if teachers are just going to look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's good work, everybody gets an A. And and then when they go to work, they don't know anything. So the assessment becomes the big issue, I think, now in terms of praxis. I don't use the word praxis that often because it sounds a little bit kind of highfalutin, but it's pulling all of this stuff together, isn't it? It's not just assessment practice, it's the old practice of teaching, learning, what's the educational aims type stuff. And educational aims are, we've got to have better thinkers, one, and I think we need to have more moral citizens, but morality not defined in a lot of conventional terms, but more from a cognitive existential base. And I think that's another challenging pod further down the line. And we can ask Sam Harris if he'll come on.
All right. Thanks for summarizing that. And yes, we have come to the end of today's podcast. And if you need to write to us, you know where to find us. We are at evidencebasedcreativeteaching@gmail.com. Once again, evidencebasedcreativeteaching@gmail.com. So I've enjoyed today's episode. It's been brilliant. I hope we can find just as an interesting topic next week, or we might want to delve a little bit deeper as you look at your YouTube videos and you find something more interesting on ChatGPT. Maybe it could be something that we could talk about in the next episode. So yes, we are done for this week. So take care, everyone, and goodbye. We will talk to you soon. So take care and goodbye.
And goodbye from me.